Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of Podcast of Justice. I'm Charlie Niemeyer.
And I'm Isaac Frisbee.
And we just totally did that without even planning it, so that looked cool. Good job, Isaac. Thank you for playing along. Okay.
Kudos to you, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, again, this is another one of those fun episodes where we really don't have a lot of stuff happening at the beginning, so we are just going to jump right into our first issue of the month, which is Justice League number 1, and since he picked the short straw, Isaac gets to go over that one.
All right, so the writer for this story is Gardner F. Fox, the penciler Mike Sikowski, inker Bernard Sachs, artist Murphy Anderson. I'm confused. Artist, penciler, I can understand what the inker is, but
Murphy Anderson's the cover artist.
Ah, the cover artist. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Ask me, I prefer his art to the Sikowski Bernard Sachs art.
Yeah.
Just an opinion.
So in this episode, we're introduced to the character of Despero, which, from what I've seen in the comic book, looks a little bit different than the one that I've known. But he still has the three eyes, and he's still kind of red. I mean, he looks like a little gangly, small, little tiny guy. The first page says, "United in action, firm in purpose, the world-famous heroes of the Justice League of America have pooled their extraordinary talents to stamp out evil and injustice wherever and whenever they may occur. Now they are called upon to fight tyranny and inhumanity in a dimensional world dominated by a three-eyed evil genius who tricks them into entering the world of no return." I love the creepy letters here because it's like Halloween-y kind of letters.
That's mm-hmm. Yeah, that looks cool. Except for the word "of" is in cursive.
Yeah, that was weird. I guess that's true.
I don't know. Sorry.
And you see him, he's got a gavel, and he's clearly judging them or doing something to all the members of the Justice League. One of the things I thought that was interesting was that it had a roll call on that page, and it said in order of appearance. I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, it's like, oh, well, that's nice. And it was like a credits to a movie. It's like in order of appearance.
But they all show up at once on the front page.
That's right. That's true. That's kind of what I thought, too. I'm like, well, technically, if we're going clockwise, it would be Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, they're not even in order on the page. Oh, man.
That's so true.
They really dropped the ball on that one. Anyway,
so Barry Allen is driving along in his car. Why, I don't know. But I guess it, you know, keeps him in touch with humanity or whatever. And he sees this blue light covering this house, and he opens up his ring. And one of the things I liked what it said is that it describes how it works. It says, pressing a secret spring on his ring, the Flash uniform spurts out, expanding on contact with the air. I mean, it doesn't go into too much detail, but it basically says that when it reacts with air, it expands. And
that's,
I'm like,
pretty
well,
cool.
That's, you know, that's kind of cool. And so he rushes in, and there are these two people. It's Jason R. and what's the girl's name? Kalanor.
Serana.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Serana, thank you.
The world is Kalanor.
They're from the planet Kalanor, which Despero has, like, taken over, and they're, like, part of this rebellion. And basically they explain to Flash that they escaped from the planet to work on this thing called, like, the anti-weapon weapon. I forget what they called it. It was an anti-weapon. It absorbs energy, and basically they're going to use it to stop Despero from using his weapons. But they have to complete it before he can get to them. Otherwise, he'll be able to use it on whatever he wants. So Barry Allen uses his little signal, and it shoots out little bolts of lightning.
he is Flash after all.
Yeah, signifying that he's living in the Justice League now. And then it shows, you know, various Justice League members getting the message, Wonder Woman and Green Lantern. One of the things I thought that was interesting in this issue, we'll get into it a little bit more, was what Green Lantern is capable of doing with this ring and what he's not capable of doing with this ring. You see Martian Manhunter, and he's stopping a crime. Green Lantern, he's saving some houses from a torrent of water, from a dam breaking, which I thought was kind of cool. I mean, it didn't look like he was putting too much effort into it, you know, and he's basically just lifting these houses out. And, of course, Snapper Carr with his old-school push mower, the you know, the old school reel mowers.
Hey, you can't knock that thing, because if he hadn't been mowing with that thing, he wouldn't have been able to save the world from Starro. So
yeah, and he's like, I hear you calling, JLA, and I'll be blasting off for the pad like my wheels were on fire.
Yo, snap.
That was how I imagined him saying it.
That's how he always sounds in my head.
Right, and
he never goes gloomy. He's just, yeah.
I never would have thought I would have seen these two together, but Batman and Aquaman are fighting a crime together on the high seas.
Smugglers. Cool. Yeah,
capturing smugglers. So basically, what Flash does is that these two rebels, or whatever you want to call them, scientist rebels, he's like, look, we've got to get you and this stuff out of the way. So there's this cave nearby, and because they see this probe beam searching around for him, so he's like, I saw a cave nearby, and he takes him there. And so then Flash goes to the JLA headquarters, and Despero's waiting. And I noticed that Despero had an unusually weird, long-looking chin right there. He looks kind of like this. I don't know. I've never seen one with that long of a chin. I'm trying to think of a specific actor. The guy that played the president in Clear and Present Danger, he had that kind of a chin. It just looks kind of weird.
Jay Leno.
Yeah, there you go. Jay Leno.
Who was not the president in Clear and Present Danger, but I can't think of his name either.
So basically, he's locked all the members of the Justice League in stasis, and he's also kidnapped Serana. And put her in stasis. And so basically what he does is that he sets up it looks like a chessboard. It doesn't say chessboard, but he sets up this checkered board with all these little miniature Justice League members on there. And I don't know if I want to be terribly complicated about this, but he basically says, you know, move them to whatever square you want. And I've got a deck of cards here that have numbers that are random. You know, I'm going to shuffle them. See, here I'm shuffling them. And you can move these characters to whatever square you want, read off the number of the square, and if the top card is the same card, then they have to go bye-bye, and I'm going to exile them to a world that they'll never be able to get out of. Well, Flash, of course, being a good sport, says, well, my chances are 63-1, so I'm just going to go ahead and go for it. And wouldn't you know it, Despero happens to pick the right number off the top of the deck for every single Justice League. When I was reading this, I thought, why does Flash even agree to this? he's clearly faster than Despero. He could have just gone up and, you know, he's like, oh, I challenge you to this game, and if you do this, and Flash is like, I don't know, but okay, you know. It's like, you know, I thought, come on, I would have been like, yeah, no, I'm gonna thump you on the head, and you're gonna go bye bye. So
yeah, it doesn't make sense.
I mean, obviously that wouldn't make the story very fun. So all the Justice League members are gone, and then they're all gone, and then Despero says, Flash didn't realize my third eye was causing a change in the number on every card he chose, so he cheated. I'm shocked. Bad guy cheats.
Didn't see that one coming.
Oh, so, and the other thing is that they put them all on separate planets, but they have them with someone else, which sounds eerily similar to some other issues we've read where, you know, they happen to be teamed up with someone else. Wonder Woman and Superman are in this prehistoric world where there happens to be kryptonite. But before I get to that, there's this scene where Wonder Woman lassos her lasso of truth onto a pterodactyl in a tree so that she can get across, but she falls into this tar pit. And there's this particular panel where she says, this lake of tar is like the La Brea tar pits in Los Angeles, where thousands of Earth's early life forms were trapped. I thought, she's like sinking and stuff, and she has time to think this to herself. And it also, and if you look at the panel, she looks like she's dancing. It's like, yeah.
It does. It does. It's like, yeah, I'm here. I'm in La Brea tar pits before.
And then she's like, oh, back to business. I gotta get down. And then Superman happens to be there, and he goes and he picks her up, And then he's like, oh, what the crap? And I can't fly so well. And so then he falls to the bottom of this cliff, and Winter was like, oh, there's some kryptonite up there. And then this was kind of odd. She climbs up the cliff using her
her
golden tiara, which I thought was weird. I mean, I guess maybe if you use the sharp end, but I don't know. I just thought that was a little odd that they did that. I think they just put that in there. But so she grabs the large kryptonite, which again was odd because apparently at some other point it was either some other planet or some earlier form of Earth or who knows. So, but Superman was like, "Why is there kryptonite here? There shouldn't be kryptonite here." Aquaman and Green Lantern, meanwhile, are on another planet where it's an entire planet of oceans because all the seas have been melted by a gigantic magnifying glass. Now, it doesn't show any other magnifying glasses, so I'm assuming it's one.
It's just the one. It's just one busy magnifying glass.
It's apparently heating up the entire ocean. And it doesn't look much larger than the Chrysler building. But it's heating up all the oceans, and they're trying to stop it. And wouldn't you know, it's yellow. And its beams are yellow, too. So Green Lantern is basically worthless. But what I like is that Green Lantern creates an iceberg with his ring, and I thought, now wait a minute. I mean, he's had this issue before, and he was able to like knock asteroids out of the sky and pick up other things, and then you know throw it at the yellow object. I'm like, I mean, surely there's got to be something that he can grab a hold of to throw at the yellow, you know. I don't know. Or maybe pick up that iceberg and then throw it at the magnifying glass. But I guess maybe then it would just dissipate since it's a...
Well, if he drops it from the top, it would... well, you know, if you break glass, it's 7 years of bad luck, so...
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he was...
You got to be careful.
Green Lantern's, like, really superstitious. But, you know, but what I like what they did, which they did in a couple of issues ago with... See, I told you I'd forget the dude's name. The weapons master.
Weapons master.
Yeah, the weapons master. It was the same thing. So Aquaman's like, I'm just gonna get a bunch of octopus again, and or well, I mean, I think the other time it was squid, right?
Yes, I think so.
But he has him squirt ink all over it, which not only blocks the sun's rays, but makes it not yellow, which allows Green Lantern to push it down into the ocean. But I still thought it was kind of cool. And on another planet, Batman and Martian Manhunter are on a planet where they hear this countdown and they don't know what it is. And they happen to run into each other as they're both hearing this countdown. And this guy... I don't know how to... describe it, but this alien guy just comes out of nowhere and he says, you're hearing a countdown of doom. Even now, a missile of flamerite is headed toward our sun. In 3592 seconds, when it hits, the sun will explode and this world of narcs will turn into a cinder. Narcs.
So they're all tattletales. It's amazing.
So this guy just basically explains to them that they're all going to die soon. And so Martian Manhunter tunnels under this gigantic laser that's going to destroy the... It was the sun, right? Yeah, it was... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll... When it hits, the sun will explode and the world of narcs will turn to cinder. I didn't quite... When I read it, I was like, what is that laser? What did the laser have to do with that? Was the laser supposed to be stopping the asteroid, or what was it supposed to be doing? I didn't... It was like they were saying an asteroid was coming our way, but...
Oh, no. Okay, he stationed one of his creatures in the tower to shoot down any ship they sent into space. And since they have no weapons, they can't attack him.
Right.
But I guess they didn't want to attack him directly, so they decided to cause a whole bunch of destruction.
Right. So
it's more fun.
Martian Manhunter tunnels underneath the laser gun tower thing, and there just happens to be a flame being there, which is Martian Manhunter's weakness.
Of course.
I'm sorry, I can't help it. I've got to mock this. They it was not very original. It's like, what are we going to do to stop him? Let's make a flame guy come out.
It's the Human Torch coming to attack the Martian Manhunter.
How to fly rockets. So he you can't put it past him. He's Batman.
Well, yeah.
So then, as the flame being's about to destroy Martian Manhunter, a great mighty wind rises, rushing around and round the flame being's, which basically stops the flame being. Batman is able to power the rocket up to the missile. It says that he gently jogs the missile. I like how it says that.
Basically, it's like, hello, missile.
Yeah, so the Flamerite missile, he was able to get away from exploding into the sun and, yay, save the planet. And then all the superheroes happen to find each other. They start finding each other. Which, does that mean they were on the same planet, or they transported somehow? I don't know.
No, Superman and Wonder Woman flew from their planet, and Green Lantern and Aquaman had used one of the underwater people's ships, and he was able to use his Green Lantern energy to turn it into a spaceship so they could fly out. Yeah. And then the other three were actually on the planet.
Yeah. So back at Jason R. and Serana's ship, Despero's actually taken over the ship from Jason R. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm going to say Jason R. I think they just took the name Jason R. at the end. And he's like, I finally got the anti-weapon, the energy absorber ready. And that's when Despero jumps in. He's like, yeah, that's what you think. And kicks him out. And Snapper happens to sneak inside. And this is what's kind of funny, is that he's immobilized the entire Justice League, but then he just sticks his hand out to Snapper to stop him. Although it looks like he's shooting some sort of beams, but it doesn't say that he is. It's got like these little things coming out of his hand.
His mental powers.
Yeah. Rash Youth, do you think you can match mental powers with Despero? And, you know, it was like...
Not.
I'll put you under my mental domination as I did the Justice League members. And then Snapper says, I better play this real cool. Make like I got the message. And so he just kind of sits still. Of course, Despero's like, well, I got him. So he like turns away, and then Snapper's able to get to the energy absorbing gun. But this is the part that I love. It says, full in the beam of the energy absorbing gun, or the energy absorbing machine, the brave youth catches the dimensional tyrant, drawing out his energy. I saw how you worked this gizmo before. I'll leave Despero just enough energy, like, to barely stay alive. I was just like, how the crap does he know how to like, he sees the guy use it one time and he knows how to use it.
Snapper's smarter than you give him credit for.
Yeah, I think they should have like an outtake panel or something like that, and then in the outtake panel you have like Despero like shrivel up and die or something like that.
it turns out there's like there's suck button, and he just used that.
So then Jason R. basically commands Snapper and says, you know, you're a hero, you know, you saved everyone. And then the Justice League happens to come back, and almost 50% of the panels he's in, he's snapping his fingers. I think he's got like OCD, or he's like, you know, something like that. He has to like snap his fingers like 30 times a minute. Otherwise, it's just like, that's why they call him Snapper. He's not being jazzy. He's actually got OCD. And so.
I'm happy. I have to snap. Otherwise, it's not going to work. 30, 30, 30, 40.
Yeah. There we go. I mean, crazy. Out that the reason that he was able to resist Despero's mind control is because he had absorbed some of the blue ray or the blue glow while in Despero's Traveler. And then. Snapper's obviously pretty happy about that. And that's where the story ends.
Yay.
This was a really good issue. I mean, I know I made fun of it, but it introduced a really cool character that, you know, they developed quite a bit in the DC universe. I thought that it was lame that they had another yellow construct. They really gotta stop doing it. But I have a funny one.
Oh, it's a trope from the Silver Age, though, so.
Yeah. But I really like, you know, a lot of the. If you look at the core of the story, he's this ruthless tyrant, and Jason R and Serana are, you know, they're rebels. They're trying to find a way to stop him. And what's even more cool is that they're rebel scientists. And I like the idea of that. I mean, usually when it's rebels, it's like, you know, some gritty, tough and gruff Han Solo, you know, dirty or whatever. But this guy's like, you know, he's not that. He's a scientist and clearly a part of a larger rebellion movement. And they happen to escape. Although I thought it was kind of funny because I didn't see Serana at the end. And so it was like they're all celebrating. And so I just imagine Jason and I just being like, yeah, hey, have you guys seen my girlfriend?
You're right. I still don't see her.
She's still trapped in stasis on what's name's ship. So I'm like, I don't know where she's at. Clearly he doesn't care that much. But no, I mean, definitely a good issue. Really enjoyed it.
I liked it too. I think one of my favorite parts, besides the whole ring thing and Wonder Woman stopping a lightning bolt from hitting the Statue of Liberty by literally ripping the thing off its foundation, was how, like, hold on, let me get to it. Okay, Green Lantern's trying to figure out what he can do to save the Earth, or to save this planet from all the water being melted away. And he actually goes through and shows the three different ways he could attack it, but it's three ways that he says will not work. He tries to shoot little thunderbolts, which actually would be lightning bolts because thunder doesn't bolt, to the thing, and they just kind of fizz away before they can hit the lens because it's yellow. He says he could move the sun, but he can't do that because it's a yellow star. So he actually shows that he could...
Go ahead.
Okay, then he shows that he could move the planet, but that would cause all life to die. And that actually reminds me of an episode of Super Friends when I don't even completely remember, I think it was a comet was about to hit the Earth, and he actually uses his ring to move the Earth out of orbit. And it causes a problem that he later has to put it back. But I thought that was kind of cool because just with it being the Silver Age, I would have assumed that they would have just had him do it and not deal with the consequences of the fact that it, you know, kills everything when you move a planet like that. But what were you going to say?
Well, I made the point earlier that, it, you know, when he was moving the houses, and later in the story we get to see a bit more of that, and I forgot about bringing that up, that he was... Yeah, I mean, we all talk about, you know, how powerful Superman was at the height of the Silver Age. Well, I mean, I guess when was he at his peak? Was it Silver Age or
Silver Age
or Bronze Age?
Silver Age. He was basically, other than for a little bit at the beginning, he was basically at the same power level for the Bronze Age. They just didn't bring it up as much.
Yeah, I mean,
he didn't do much juggling.
I mean, they either mention it or it actually happens in a story where Superman can hear like conversations on the other side of the planet. You know, if he sneezes, it'll destroy Earth, or if he sneezes the wrong way. None of this is made up. I mean, it's either mentioned in the comics or it actually happens in some sort of weird parallel universe or something like that.
And he could move planets.
Yeah, so if you look at like Superman the movie in proper context, him turning back time isn't that far-fetched when you're comparing him to Superman at the peak of his powers. But this right here is like Green Lantern's like, well, I could do this, and it was just a part of a list. It wasn't like, well, it wasn't like it wasn't an option. It was like a part of a long list. Oh, well, I could do this, I could do this, I could move the planet, but then people would die, you know. And it was so casual that I was like, wow, is he really that powerful? That's pretty sweet, you know. And I like that.
Yeah, they I don't know when they knocked down the power, but I know I have seen stuff that at the beginning It was like Flash wasn't it, or was it Flash? Like Flash needed a treadmill to go through time,
Right.
but
The cosmic treadmill.
and later on, Wally can do it just by running. But that was just, I think he was pretty much the opposite, the only one that went that way, where he got powerful, more powerful later.
Right.
And then all these other characters, like I believe at this point, Green Lantern could use his ring to go through time too.
Yeah.
And eventually it somehow gets powered down. I don't know if it's just a writing thing or if they actually had a story reason, but it eventually gets powered down just because I guess they just got to a point where it's like, all we can do is throw yellow stuff at them. So we need to, eventually they started running out of interesting stories to do when you can literally use the ring to do anything. So, but I think Martian Manhunter's a little less powerful now. Well, actually, they beefed up his mental stuff, but he's less power. Actually, I guess Wonder Woman's a little more powerful now, but
Yeah, the I think
I just totally killed my own point, so.
the cycle you see in comic books is that you have a character and it's like, well, what can we do with them next? And they obviously weren't at the point where Marvel was at, which, in a couple years or in like basically a year from when this came out almost, you had Fantastic Four come out, and then a couple years after that you had Spider-Man. So they weren't really exploring a whole lot of the emotional and personal depth of these characters. So they really only, from a certain perspective, I mean, obviously they could have done something else, but really they only had one choice. How can we expand these characters? Well, they can do this. Let's have them do this. And you have this escalation of powers before they just become omnipotent. And then they get powered down and then they get back up again. And it's happened a lot of times, especially with Superman. I think the perfect example is, he started out being able to leap tall buildings and, bullets would ricochet, but they would kind of sort of hurt them a little bit. When Action Comics first came out, he didn't have all the powers that he had. It was, well, I mean, to the extent that we know, like laser vision and stuff like that. And then he just became this godlike character. And then, they powered him down during Crisis, but then he just got ramped up again. I think it was, what was the series that Michael Turner did? I think it was called Godfall or something like that,
Oh, yes,
where
Godfall.
Superman takes over the planet, and it just shows how unbelievably omnipotent he could be if he wanted to be. And through and even in the Justice League comic, more specifically, in the late 90s, early part of the decade of the 21st century, it was almost like it went through, what could happen if like one of them was at their peak. I think the only one they haven't really done that. Well, no, I take that back. They did it with Aquaman. Aquaman, I think, was Rock of Ages. Maybe that was Wonder Woman. I think it was Aquaman, though. A fantastic storyline, but that's one of the reasons why I like Aquaman was because of that story. Wonder Woman, they made a big deal about her snapping that guy's neck, but I thought, good for you. I mean,
Yeah, that was way later, but yeah.
we could stop a lot of murders if these guys just started killing the villains instead of like, let's throw them in prison. Well, they've killed like 50,000 people. Yes, but it's the right thing to do, and we don't want to lower ourselves to their level. I'm pretty sure that if you kill them, no one would mind. But like Green Lantern earlier in the 90s, with the parallax thing, and then Kyle Rayner becoming Ion, you had a limited series focused on Martian Manhunter. So, I mean, you have this going on in the comics where it's like, well, what do we do with them? And that's just one of the things that tends to happen. They don't have like really any limitations. So, you see this constant wave. So if anyone ever wants to complain, oh, Superman's too powerful, I'm sorry, but they've pretty much done this with all of the characters. And one of the things about Aquaman that makes him so powerful is that because a lot of his stuff is magic based, especially like in the earlier part of this decade, there's nothing the Justice League can do about it because it's magic based, which I think kind of segues relatively nicely into our next story.
Yes, very nice. See, I like how you do that. It's like you have done this before.
That was totally planned.
I know.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman Podcast,
Superman Forever Radio,
The Superman Vidcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com,
as well as the audio dramas Superman, Last Son of Krypton, and Supergirl, Last Daughter of Krypton, from Pendant Audio Production. Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
J. David Weeder,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
Why, hello there, lovely ladies. May I just say that you look quite beautiful in your matching Slave Leia metal bikinis? You have permission to come aboard my den of nerd-erotica. Some people would call it my mom's garage. I call it 10.1 forward. Can I interest you in a death stick? Nope. I was just kidding. Have a shot of Tranya. Once you get loosened up, we can play a friendly game of strip fizzbin. Let me loosen that strap.
Hey suckers, Maury Clawhammer here, okay? You want your freaking Star Wars? I got your Star Wars right here! What about the Star Trek? You like that too, right? Right? That's what I thought. Well, we got that and we got more freaking comics than you can read in your entire miserable damn life. Hey, there's even a girl who talks about unicorns and Harry Potter and them Oriental cartoons with the big eyes. So you get your ass over to the Two True Freaks podcast at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. That's spelled LIBSYN, all right? All right? Good. You can get there on the internet and choose from hundreds of quality Two True Freaks podcasts. And would it kill you to buy a damn t-shirt? Remember, Two True Freaks, Two True Freaks, Two True Freaks, Two True Freaks.
My issue for the month is Justice League of America number 2, which had a January 1961 cover date, was released on October 27th, 1960 for a mere dime.
You gotta love it.
Yes. You know, you could get 100 issues for like 10 bucks. Because I was going for how many issues you could get for a dollar, but I went too far. Anyway, the story, the title of this story is The Secret of the Sinister Sorcerers, written by Gardner Fox, with pencils by Mike Skakowski, and inks by Bernard Sachs. And of course, once again, Murphy Anderson drew the cover, and it is so much better. Anyway.
I agree.
Not as a total kick to Skakowski, but I have never been a real fan of his. Anyway, in this story, it starts off at the annual Magic Society convention, which is just sad that there's a Magic Society. And Green Lantern's there as a special guest, and he witnesses a magician successfully make a girl appear from out of nowhere,
which excites him.
yes, it is very exciting.
However, how do I do this magic trick again?
The thing is that the trap door that the girl was supposed to rise up from was actually locked, and yet the magic trick still worked. That leaves even the magician wondering what the heck's going on. So then, all over the place, we see all the members of the Justice League learning that all man-made objects of science have suddenly stopped working. Superman's powers aren't working. Flash's costume won't pop back into his ring, because Well, last issue we saw it pop out of his ring. Apparently, he can also push a button on his ring that's supposed to suck his costume back into it. And I don't know how that works, but for some reason it's not working. And let's see, Batman's utility belt isn't working. All kinds of fun stuff. So then we move over to the fabled Magic Land, where Merlin the Magician is on the land of Camelot, of course, but he's unable to perform a magic spell to make it rain. When suddenly the evil Simon Magus, is it Magus? 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 I don't know. He's an evil magician. Saturna, who's the Lord of Misrule, and the Troll King, who doesn't have a subtitle, arrive and reveal to him that after learning how to get to our world, they learned about it and call it the World of Science. And then they returned to the Magic Land and used a three-part spell to switch our world with theirs so that Magic Land is in our science dimension and Earth is in their magic dimension, which is why everything's gone wonky. And of course, since apparently that means that they can't be stopped because no one thinks to, you know, hit them, these three just take all the treasures from Magic Land, like the sword Excalibur, that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, back on our world, the JLA have met up, and I don't know how, because, you know, none of them can fly or anything. But the JLA have met up and realized that magic still works, thanks to Green Lantern's conveniently being at the Magic Society convention. So they put together a quick spell and find out that they could bring up a blue ruby, which is pretty cool. I would think that was kind of small. They might have wanted to try something a little bigger. But what I liked about that was Flash, who, as we know, is a man of science, is completely uncomfortable with doing all this magic stuff. And I like that because this is the first time we've actually gotten, like, characterization for the characters other than specifically talking about their powers. Because basically we've just been having, like, any one of them could have said their other lines, except for maybe Wonder Woman, because she's the secretary. And
which I'd like to point out that this kind of falls in line with a recent episode of Young Justice, where, you know, you have the character who...
Kid Flash.
Right.
And they have to deal with magic.
Right. It's the same kind of thing. He's like, well, there's always an explanation, you know, and...
It's just an advanced form of science we don't understand, and that kind of stuff, yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool, the tie-in.
So I hadn't even thought of that, but yes, exactly. So back to the story. Where was I? Here we go. After explaining what has happened, I just jumped ahead in the notes, so I'm going to go back a little bit further. So since they realized that this spell worked, they decide they're going to summon the most powerful magician ever known, even though he's technically not real, Merlin. So they summon him, and he's now in the world of magic. And they explain to him everything that's gone on, and he realizes that since he's in the land of magic, his powers will work now. So he uses a spell and sends the Justice League over to the Earth on the science dimension side. Now, first up, we have Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter, and they somehow find Saturna's secret hideout, since it's secret, on the continent of Asgard. And they have a fight with Thor and Odin. No, wait, that's the wrong comic. They have a fight with a manticore, which looks to be a lion with a dude's head, and it's a dude with a bad mustache, and a griffin, which is, of course, half eagle, half lion, and... they fight them, and they start to lose, and then they start to win. And before they finally meet up with and defeat Saturna and retrieve his part of the three-part spell. Next up, we see Wonder Woman and Flash go after the Troll King on the continent of Olympia. And after Flash takes down the Troll Giants with some whirlwinds, he gets trapped by the Troll King. So Wonder Woman has to take out the dwarf Trolls by herself. And she does, before falling into the trap herself. And then, after breaking the laws of physics to escape their trap, because they're in a room, it's a small room, where Flash doesn't have enough room to, you know, build up enough speed to get out of there. And apparently the wall's too thick for Wonder Woman to bust out and would take too long to break through the wall with her tiara. They have water pumping into this room. So somehow, and I don't quite understand it, Flash makes like a bird and moves his arms really fast, which somehow he makes sure that it's cold air, and it makes all the water turn to ice, and they're able to climb out. Which, yeah. Anyway, so they climb out just as the Troll King is leaving in a helicopter. So Wonder Woman snares it down with her magic lasso, and Flash retrieves the second part of the magic spell. Now, on the continent of Oceania, Superman, Batman, and Aquaman split up and each catch up to Simon Magus, or Magus, or however you say his name. I'm just going to call him Simon from here on out.
Simon so Magus.
Magus? Thank you. Anyway, so Superman tackles him in the sky, but after he captures him, Simon disappears. Batman, who is going through the forest, once again defeats him, but he again fades from his hands. So next up, he goes up against Aquaman under the sea, and Aquaman again defeats him, but this time he doesn't fade away, because as it turns out, and because Batman figured this out, Simon has now been defeated in the air, on the land, and now in the sea, and those are his three lives. So now he can't do anything but, you know, stick around. So they now have him and his part of the spell. So with all three parts of the spell, the JLA try to get back to Earth, which is still in the magic dimension, and they are met by this blue giant creature, who, as it turns out, is actually Snapper, because he'd accidentally transformed himself while messing around with Merlin's wand. So they take him back to...
That's like, he turns himself into a gigantic monster. You know, I would think that he would, like, pop his head off, or, you know...
Yeah.
Or, you know, have... can't be realistic here.
Or, you know, have a bunch of brooms bringing in water, like Sorcerer's Apprentice. But no, he's turned himself into a giant Smurf. So the JLA and Giant Snapper get back to our Earth, and Merlin makes him come back, you know, uses a spell to make him back to normal again. And of course, at this point, Wonder Woman has to chide him. Maybe now you'll learn your lesson. And Merlin uses a spell to put Earth and Magic Land back where they're supposed to be. And Merlin goes back to Magic Land and says that the others will be punished and everything will be good on their end, and things return to normal back on our end, and that's the end. And other than that whole Snapper thing kind of being thrown in there, because of course we almost had a full story without Snapper, I didn't think it was too bad.
In the end of it, I think.
Yeah, other than that very end, we almost went through the whole story without really seeing Snapper. So other than that, I believe that this was a pretty good story too. It's not quite as fun as that first one. But, yeah, what'd you think?
You know, I actually liked it more because I love stories about magic. Like, that's why one of my favorite superheroes is Dr. Fate. Mm-hmm. And I love storylines revolving around Dr. Fate and the JSA and stuff like that. I love stories about magic because the thing is that magic is the one thing that the heroes cannot do a single thing about. You know, and right. So it really does take someone that's either really smart or that is a powerful wizard themselves. I thought the Snapper thing at the end was really dumb and unnecessary. And the other thing I thought was that, like, you know, Wonder Woman kind of chastises them at the end. You know, let me get it up here. I hope this teaches you never to meddle in anything you don't understand, Snapper. And it has his name in bold. You know, so she's obviously ticked off at him and she's pointing at him. And of course, he's high as a kite. I mean, look at him. He's just like, yeah, man, that's real hip quip, Wonder Woman. I know the score now. You bet. I'm pretty sure that after that, unfortunately, because of my duty to keep things insanely real, as I have my entire life, even as a child, I would watch movies and be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I just imagine, like, the Justice League sitting down afterwards. And they'll just kind of sit there, and there's this uncomfortable silence, and they're all just like, yeah. And then finally someone says, Snapper? Yeah. And they're like, he needs to go. this is nice, but he's going to seriously get us killed here.
Yeah, this was fun, but, you know, we just can't have you snapping all over the place and making yourself big and blue and stuff. That's kind of gross.
I think that, you know, I wish that they had more magic-related stuff. I wish they could do a character like Merlin in a regular series, because I like the magic stuff. I love magic. I love magic-based stories. You know, I've always been into fantasy-related novels. I mean, I'm not like a Dungeons and Dragons player or anything like that, but I mean, I love those kind of stories that are based on those universes, like Forgotten Realms and stuff like that. And so I really like the magic stories, and so that's why I think I like this one better than the previous one, even though it didn't have like this critical character. You know, I'd like to see more of Merlin, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, you know, we basically, you know, you've got Dr. Fate, you've got Zatanna, you've got, you know, you've already got some magicians, so it's kind of hard to put a character like that in there. Although the one thing I have to say about Zatanna that's really annoying is that she, in order to do her magic, she just says things backwards. I think that someone would catch on to that eventually, you know?
Yeah, you would think so.
Why don't they just have like a made-up language? I think that it's really lazy to be like, oh yeah, her magic is saying stuff backwards, you know? It's like their idea guy was just sitting on the couch watching, I don't know what lazy people watch, Dora? Is he too lazy to change the channel? I don't know. Can you give us a language? Nah, just make her say it backwards. So, you know, I liked, this is a really good issue, really cool. Snapper, unnecessary.
yeah. Well, they do notice that sometimes, because I know a lot of times she, like everyone else in these Justice League books, I know a lot of times they get her by covering her mouth with something so she can't talk.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. The only thing I have, I mean, magic stories don't bother me. It's just sometimes you got to be careful, because they're, it's like, how do you limit the magic? Because technically, I would think that Merlin, once he's on his planet, would have been able to use a magic spell to reverse everything. Of course, he wouldn't have had a story, but to return everything back to normal.
Yeah, that's true.
Just, you know, just right away. And now, I understand why they didn't, because otherwise, like I said, it'd be like a 5-page story. But, yeah, it's just one of those things that caught me. It's like, why couldn't they do that? But that's the only problem I have with magic stories. It's like, you got, because you have to, you still have to kind of limit it, and it's hard to tell where you're going to limit it, you know? But yeah, like you were saying, I love the way Dr. Fate was used, especially in the JSA book, the one with Jeff Johns and David Goyer writing it, I thought was really cool. But yeah, a lot of times I have a problem with magic unless if they can come up with a set of rules for the magic and stay with that for at least that one story, but preferably for however, you know, I guess what it is with the magic thing, it's just depending on who the writer is, you're going to have different, you know, different set of rules for the magic.
Right.
Is basically my problem with it. And that's one of the things with this one, was that I'm sure if someone else was writing it, or if this had to be an 8-page story, that they'd have no problem with, you know, doing what I just said there and just have it, you know, just have Merlin just fix everything and everything's good to go again.
Right.
But because, of course, we had, you know, they couldn't do that this time, then he couldn't do that this time. I don't know. Then again, it was a 3-part spell, so he kind of, I guess, Fox figured it out first to, if, you know, if you make it a 3-part spell, then Merlin can't do it on his own, so screw it. And I'm really good at talking myself in circles, so do you have any other things you wanted to say about this one?
No. Just a really, okay. Really great issue.
All right. Well, we're just going to take a couple seconds here to play one or two quick promos, and we'll come back and we'll do our elsewheres, and then we'll be done with this episode.
It's for every one of us. It's not for every one of us. It's not even the money. seed of Mongo live together in peace.
Wait, he said Mongo, didn't he? That's wrong character, wrong universe, and wrong galaxy. Hold on just one sec. Ah, here we go. Flash Legacies, a podcast connecting the adventures of Wally West, the third hero to be known as The Flash. Join me, Dave Walker, in my bi-weekly journey as I look at Wally's career from when he first donned the mantle of The Flash all the way up to the return of Barry Allen. Find me at flashlegacies.libsyn.com.
Hey everybody, my name is Michael Bailey, and this is the trailer with a truly epic ending to my new show about Batman, appropriately titled Bailey's Batman Podcast. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a weekly program that looks at a month in the life of the Dark Knight Detective, starting with the books bearing a March 1983 cover date, which is where my solid run of the character's comics begins, and moving forward until... well, at least until the books that came out in 2005, because that's where the solid run ends. Each week, I will give you a full synopsis and review of every major ongoing Batman title, with brief stops along the way to look at the important specials, miniseries, one-shots, and Elseworld stories, just to keep things interesting. I'll also be telling you what other books Batman appeared in that month, as well as what was going on elsewhere in the DCU. It is going to be all Batman, all the time, as I look at over 20 years of the character's history. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the epic ending to this trailer. You ready? The first appearance of Jason Todd. Death in the Family. Nightfall. Epic. No Man's Land. Do you have chills yet? All of that and more will be covered on Bailey's Batman Podcast every Tuesday at baileysbatmanpodcast.com.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice...
We've got 2 months' worth of books to go over real quick with you. We're not going to go over everything. We're just going to kind of highlight some of the big stuff. The ones I wanted to point out, let's see, Justice League of America number 1 was cover dated November 1960 and came out in August. And some of the big books that came out that month that I noted, once I pull up my notes. Superman number 140 features a story involving Bizarro Jr., the son of Bizarro. Now that story, if you all have ever followed Superman, for some reason
it's really funny because Bizarro has a Bizarro Lois and
this story has been reprinted a gajillion times. I don't know why it's not one of my favorites, but basically as as Isaac was getting ready to allude to, for some reason when Bizarro Superman and Bizarro Lois procreate, they make a normal baby, and he's lifting 3001 knot. And I don't know, it's a big weight. One side of it says one and then the word not, like,
well,
90s,
I mean,
window.
I think 3000 and then it's supposed to say one ton, but it's not one ton. So
I
think it's like a play on birds or something.
I thought it was like it's one,
because usually when they lift a weight like that, it usually says like one ton, but on the side it says 3000, meaning it's not one ton.
Okay, I'm with it. See, I don't understand Bizarro speak sometimes. But anyway, yeah, so this... now, Mike's Amazing World of DC, which is where we get all of our fun information, only lists, one, two, three, four, five, six places where it's been reprinted. And I can think of at least one or two more. But yeah, that's not one of my favorite. But the reason I'm really pointing this out, one, is because it's apparently it's a popular story because they keep reprinting it, and also it is the first appearance of Bizarro Jr. And he does come back. Now, Bizarro Jr., I should also point out, looks exactly like Superman when he was Super Baby. He even has a red, blue, and yellow play suit. But with white socks, because red socks would be crazy. The next issue I wanted to point out was Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane number 20. That's because, for one thing, it's an imaginary story that involves Superman and Lois getting married and then adopting Supergirl. But also, I found out that this is actually the second ever imaginary story. Like, ever. That wasn't truly an imaginary story. So that's kind of cool.
It's also kind of creepy, the cover.
Yeah, it looks like looks like Supergirl wants to, like, make out with Superman.
And Superman looks like he totally wants to...
He's like, I totally get with the teenager.
Yeah. It's
like,
yeah, like,
basically, they kind of look like two characters from any of these other romance comics. So
that's
yeah.
True. They just added some capes to it.
Yeah, just got the capes. I mean, if they were like...
Yeah,
like somewhere...
a girl, they're hugging, and the woman's just like, what the hell?
Yeah, if she was like in some kind of modest one-piece bathing suit, and he was in some kind of swim shorts, I mean, it would be... the same as like Date with Judy, just a little bit further up the page. Anyway, we have Jimmy Olsen number 48 came out this month, and that is the first appearance of the Superman Emergency Squad. And I don't know how many people out there know that. And again, this is because both Isaac and I kind of have a thing for Superman, not like Supergirl tries to do on Lois, in the Lois issue, but we have an affinity for Superman stuff. And this is the first Superman Emergency Squad, which is basically several people from Kandor that pop out of Kandor to help Superman from time to time. And this is the first time they showed up. Just other issues of note, we have Adventure Comics number 277, Action Comics number 269 with the Truth Mirror. That reveals that Superman is Clark, with Lois standing right there. That's crazy. Detective Comics 284 with the Negative Batman, and you know it's weird. He's not one of those. He's not like depressed or anything. He's just like negative colors. And in Batman 135, I don't know what the heck that thing is, but Batman and Robin go against some weird looking. Looks like a guy in a Power Rangers bad guy reject costume.
Yeah, he looks kind of retarded.
Yeah, it's...
Hey, I'm going to beat you guys up.
Exactly. He does have his own signal, though, and which is weird, too. But, yeah, this is definitely one of those in that era where they were trying to do sci-fi stories with Batman, and it just wasn't working. Did you see anything else you wanted to point out, Isaac?
No, those were definitely good highlights. One of the things I wanted to point out was one of my favorite artists who actually did Superman was the cover artist was Kurt Swan, mm-hmm. who is one of my favorite Superman artists, and the penciler was Wayne Boring, also one of my favorite Superman artists.
Oh, well, cool. Yeah, Kurt Swan actually does the covers for all the Super books this month. This is, what is this, 1960? I think this is when about the Wayne Boring was kind of edged, not really being edged out or whatever, but he was kind of slowly leaving, and Kurt was kind of becoming more of the main artist, and they started him off by making him the cover artist to the Superman family of books, so. But yeah, he also did the cover for Superboy number 84, which actually features Superboy against the Rainbow Reader, which I could have sworn was a Flash bad guy, but I think that's a different Rainbow Reader.
Yeah.
And of course, the politically incorrect, the Super Engine of Smallville, which doesn't deal with a car. But so, well, that was that month. And then, of course, JLA number 2 came out during was on sale in October of 1960. So the some of the comics I wanted to point out that month were Superboy number 85, which, while the main story involves the secret of Mighty Boy and is basically Superboy going up against like his doppelganger, but he's blonde. The second story in that book was The Impossible Mission, which is one of my first Superboy stories that I ever read, which actually involves Superboy going back in time and trying to stop the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and learning that you can't change history because Lex Luthor shows up and prevents adult Lex Luthor shows up and ends up stopping Superboy from stopping the assassination. It turns out Luthor's there to try to stop the assassination too, but because they end up fighting each other, neither one of them stops the assassination, and that shows that history can't be changed. And I keep reiterating that. So, yeah, so that's a cool story. And then Flash Comics number 117 features the first appearance ever of Captain Boomerang.
Captain Boomerang. Part of the Flash's ridiculously stupid rogues gallery. You know, it's funny because other than Batman, I actually know Flash's rogue gallery probably better than any of the other heroes. I mean, because Superman, you've got like, I mean, I guess you have a lot there. I mean, you got Bizarro, you've got Lex Luthor, you've got Metallo, you've got Brainiac. Well, the Flash, his rogues gallery, I know, but they just don't seem very intimidating. Mirror Man, Captain Boomerang, you know, Captain Cold, Trickster, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, we've already know that Mirror Master was around by this point because we saw Flash had to beat him in one of the early stories of Justice League. So they're definitely working on getting those rogues built up, and it's, I don't know, I kind of like I kind of like Flash's rogues, but to each his own. The Batman number 136 has a weird cover because the Joker is flying a giant smiling spaceship that shoots flame out of its mouth. And yeah,
I'm just surprised he spent so much time coming up with contraptions like this when he's like, I think I'm just going to make a pipe bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, see, that takes a lot of not quite insane planning to do that, but then again, you have to be insane to come up with that design.
Right.
So. Then Action Comics number 271 came out featuring The Voyage to Dimension X, plus Supergirl got adopted that issue. Oh, I totally missed that. How did I miss that in my notes? Let's see. Is that really what happens? Oh, she does, but then she gets returned to the orphanage. So she hasn't been found out yet. She's still Linda Linda. Okay, so this is still... Not only is she still a secret, but she's still... But she's also still in the orphanage. And then there's Detective Comics number 286, with having to save the doomed Batwoman. And Adventure Comics number 279, and for some reason Superboy has gone all the way to the 50th century. And Jimmy Olsen gets really fat in Jimmy Olsen number 49.
You know, can I ask a question about that? That series lasted for a very long time, in my opinion, too long. What was the appeal of that comic book, do you think?
Well, early on, of course, the character was really popular from the Adventures of Superman show. So I'm guessing it's just because Jimmy was kind of young and it had just enough of Superman to kind of keep it a Superman book, but I'm thinking it's just because Jimmy got into some crazy adventures, but he was the kid that the readers were supposed to identify with. And then I know that it was going down in numbers by the time Jack Kirby got the book, and he had it for a little bit, and then he left and it went down again, which is why it was one of the books that got consolidated into Superman Family. But the major appeal, I have no idea. Because up until the Jack Kirby stuff, I wasn't a huge fan of the book myself.
It was funny because I've recently been reading All-Star Superman. For the first time, mind you. I'd never read it when it first came out, and I bought the first volume of the collection. Have you read it?
Yes, I have both volumes.
The part where Superman comes in contact with the Black Kryptonite, and he starts becoming a bit more cantankerous, and he like snaps on Jimmy about his, you know, his Superman watch that he has that notifies Superman. I thought that should have happened like a long time ago. I love that scene, you know, where he's like, he's trying to burn him with his laser vision and stuff. And I mean, of course, Jimmy Olsen's reaction was really cool. He's just like, "What the crap?" Trying to get away from him. But I thought, didn't Superman lose his patience eventually and be like, you know, because I would, if I were Jimmy Olsen, I would almost abuse it. I would just be like, "Superman, I just someone to hang out with, you know."
Superman's jumped down his throat a few times, but when he's done that, if he starts abusing it, he does. In some ways, Superman's like his big brother, and then when he messes with stuff too much, he does get into the father figure type of thing. But yeah, I forgot to point out, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had an issue this month, and. Yeah, I just thought I'd point that out. He's got the, fastest nose in the West. And that wraps us up for this time. Make sure you write into us at podcastofjustice, thank you, @gmail.com. You can visit the show at podcastofjustice.blogspot.com. And, of course, we are also available on iTunes. This is Charlie.
This is Isaac.
And... y'all have a good day.
Take care.
See you later. Bye-bye.